ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय From the 7th canto, 13th chapter, text number 19. कविः कल्पो निपुणो दृक् चित्रप्रियकथः समः लोकस्य कुर्वतः कर्म शेषे तद्वीक्षितापि वा Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Your honor appears learned, expert, and intelligent in every way. You can speak very well, saying things that are pleasing to the heart. You see that people in general are engaged in fruitive activities, yet you are lying here inactive? Purport. Prahlad Maharaj studied the bodily features of the saintly person, and through the saint's physiognomy, Prahlad Maharaj could understand that he was intelligent and expert. Although he was lying down and not doing anything, Prahlad was naturally inquisitive about why he was lying there inactive. Your honor appears learned, expert, and intelligent in every way. You can speak very well, saying things that are pleasing to the heart. You see that people in general are engaged in fruitive activities, yet you are lying here inactive. So this is a narration which is being spoken by Narada. He's quoting an incident which involves the conversation of Prahlad with an avadhut who's lying down and who's showing symptoms of great intelligence, expertise, and excellent speaker. And Prahlad Maharaj is inquisitive and asking him that how is it that you have all the capabilities of earning wealth, name, fame, prestige, but still you are just lying down here inactive? It's quite surprising. So that is the question which Prahlad Maharaj is asking him. So here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is saying that Prahlad Maharaj studied the bodily features of the saintly person, and through the saint's physiognomy, Prahlad Maharaj could understand that he was an intelligent expert, and although he was lying down, he was still a very capable person. So here, by looking at the face of this avaduta, so Paramhamsa devotee, Prahlad Maharaj could ascertain that he was a very intelligent person. Prabhupada says that this is the science of physiognomy. You know, this is by looking at a person's face. Physiognomy means when you study a person's face, you can understand his capabilities. You can understand who he is. This is an amazing science, isn't it? I mean, just by looking at a person's face, you can actually see and tell whether he's a very advanced devotee, he's a materialist, or what he is. So this is the science of physiognomy. Face reading, which Prahlad was an expert. So we see that all these arts, a devotee is expert in the art of reading faces. It's a science. So our Vedas contain a lot of such arts and skills where you can, you know, like palmistry, astrology, they're all wonderful sciences. And it was known to the devotees naturally. Here we can see that how Prahlad Maharaj, just by looking at a person's face, you could understand that he's expert. Even though apparently he is not engaged in any materialistic activity. And when he speaks, when this Paramhamsa devotee, he starts speaking, actually it is revealed that he's truly a very intelligent person. So that means his analysis, his face reading was correct. So, we see that this is an amazing science, which is not known to modern philosophers and scientists. And it is very common in our Shastra, as we again and again see, like there's one case of Mahiravan, that how Mahiravan in his palace, he had a technology that if anyone who's entering, he gets an understanding of how envious he is or how friendly he is. Just like you have metal detectors in airports. Imagine if this technology was there with the airport officials, custom officers. Just by looking at a person's face, they could actually understand whether he's carrying some, you know, some illegal drugs or some kind of gold or something like that. So they don't need all these metal detectors, X-ray machines, nothing. So Mahidavan had also such an equipment by which he could have a meter. Says if someone is very envious, then the meter would go, you know, like this. Very envious, very envious. And if he was friendly, then he would be very friendly. So then he would understand. And that was the technology actually known to the Vedic scholars. Even astrology is a wonderful science. You see that. So these signs have somehow not have been lost, actually. And if today we present such a philosophy to people, then they say, no, no, it's not possible. But Srila Prabhupada, he actually wanted the Bhaktivedanta Institute to study this, you know, these sciences. That's why he said astrology should study. Bhaktivedanta Institute should study this science and present it to the scientists. So people generally feel like, no, no, this is not true. This cannot be true. Like there is a person whose name is Johann Lavater. Caspar Johann Lavater. He was a materialistic scientist in 1740s. In Switzerland, he researched on this physiognomy, and he came up with a theory like that, that there is some semblance with a person's character and his face. But somehow that theory was rejected because it didn't have any scientific basis and it was not verifiable and nor was it very accurate. But that does not mean that the science didn't exist. The science is true. Just like astrology, if you go to an astrologer, he can actually predict your past, present and future. But these days people, you know, they find that it's not coming true. Many times, you know, they make mistakes. But the science is perfect. Astrology is perfect. But the astrologers are not perfect. So just like that, the science is perfect. But we have to know how to apply that science. So that is the thing. So we may not understand it through our material sciences. But it is a science. It is a science. Like for example, now, you know, recently there was this tsunami, and it is explained that when the tsunami hit the somewhere in the Indian Ocean, yeah, it was in the Indian Ocean, right? Somewhere in the epicenter was somewhere in the Indian Ocean, and it struck many countries. And between the first country that it hit and the last country that it hit, there was a gap of 4 hours. 4 hours. And it hit, and how many people died approximately? Can anyone make a guess? 80,000 people were killed in the tsunami. But between this first country and the last country to be hit, within the gap of 4 hours, with the modern science and technology, the last country to be hit didn't have the slightest clue that there is a tsunami coming. With all the latest equipments and the seismographs and the satellite images and, you know, and all those technologies, the scientists just had no clue that there is a tsunami. And it was not a small tsunami. It was a big one. It is said that that tsunami was having the strength of 1,000,000 Nagasaki atomic bombs. That was the strength of it. And the result was 80,000 people got killed. So we don't have that technology to understand, actually. In fact, we have a technology where science and technology expert, maybe if you drop a bomb, 1,000,000 bombs, you can kill so many people. But there's no technology to save lives. There's a lot of technology to destroy lives. So with this current knowledge of science, we can't come to understand how these sciences work. This is a science which is far more superior than our modern science. And you know, the best part was that when the people died, so many people died, when they were digging out the people, the dead bodies in lakhs, in thousands, they couldn't find any bodies of animals. How come? Because the animals, they had a technology, God-given technology, to understand a tsunami was coming. Therefore, all of them went to higher grounds. And human beings with all their science and technology couldn't understand that a tsunami was coming. With all their telescopes and microscopes and their satellites, they still couldn't see. And even after it hit the first country, they didn't have the technology to give that message to the other countries that, you know, please evacuate that place. A tsunami is coming. So we see that how obsolete our technology is as compared to the Vedic technology. So much. So advanced. And we can see Prahlad had it, and even our modern acharyas like Srila Prabhupada also had it. He could see through people. Like recently, about a year ago, I was hearing one lecture by Umapati Maharaj, and he was telling that when he first met Srila Prabhupada, he was... Today we see Umapati Maharaj, he's like so wonderful sannyasi Vaishnav, wearing the dress of a sannyasi. But he said, when I was new in Krishna consciousness, I was like a, dressed up like a hippie with, you know, long beard and short pants. But he said that Srila Prabhupada had the vision to see through all these coverings and still have the patience to guide us in Krishna consciousness. So the art of seeing through the externals was there with devotee, with Srila Prabhupada. Also we see in the book that His Holiness Radharat Maharaj has written that when he was attending the lecture on the Gita in Cross Maidan, around 15, 20, 30,000 people were there in that festival. But still, Srila Prabhupada, out of all the people, he saw him and he picked him up and he said, "You come and sit on the stage." What a miracle, isn't it? Amazing. Out of 20,000 people, a person who's dressed like a hippie or maybe a Babaji or someone, could be anyone. But out of 20,000 people, he picks up one person and tells him to come forward and sit on the stage next to his feet to sit and listen to the class, understanding that he was special. So we can see that art was known to the devotees. So here we can see that by reading this verse, one may be led to think that the natural behavior when a person is educated and one becomes a devotee and one takes up to spiritual life, one should become inactive, just like this person is doing. He's not doing anything apparently. But no, he was very, very active. He was constantly meditating on the Supreme Lord. Within his heart, he was constantly meditating on the Supreme Lord, as it can be, it will be apparent when we read the subsequent verses. He's speaking great philosophy about Krishna consciousness. So, it is not that when a person takes up the spiritual life, he becomes inactive. No. So, in the Gita, it is explained that karmanya karma iha pashyet, akarmani cha karma iha, sa buddhiman manusyeshu, sa yukta kritna karma krit. That one who sees inaction and action, and action and inaction, is truly actually said to be transcendental, a truly spiritualist. So, what is inaction and action? That is Krishna consciousness. To act in the proper consciousness, with the proper motivation, which is to serve the Lord, to be a representative of the Supreme Lord in this world, and to execute His will in this world, is actually a true inaction. And such a person, even though he acts, he does not incur any karma. And therefore he is said to be inactive, materially inactive. So here we can see that even though he is apparently not engaged in any external materialistic activities, but within his heart he is constantly serving the Supreme Lord. He is constantly meditating. So that is actually the essence. To come to the point of constant meditation of the Supreme Lord. Krishna says that in the Gita also, in the 12th chapter. Mayeva mana adhatsva, mai buddhim niveshya, niveshyati mayeva atha urdhvam samshaya. Always think of me. Always, within your hearts, mayeva mana adhatsva, mai buddhim niveshya, engage your intelligence in me. Okay, if you can't do that, then all right. Then he says next, all right. If you can't do that, then you engage in devotional activities, devotional principles. So, he gives certain concessions. So, the ultimate culmination is to come to the point of meditation on the Supreme Lord, internally, being completely active spiritually. So, that is the essence. So, that is the the goal of all spiritual sadhanas. Even in the sixth chapter, Krishna says, Arurukshur Munir Yogam, Karma Karana Muchute, Yogharudasthitasteva, Kshama Karana Muchute. That in the neophyte stage, material activities are said to be the route to achieve perfection. But when one is advanced in Krishna consciousness, or one advanced in yogic practices, then to avoid materialistic activities is the means. So that is actually the culmination, to somehow or another through our activities be engaged in such a way to somehow come to the point of contemplation on the Supreme Lord, constant contemplation. So devotee, even though he is active, but he is still inactive materially. It appears to be inactive, but he is actually active within, spiritually. So this question is generally also asked with devotees. It's a common question when someone meets devotees. You know, they say, hey, you are educated? Like sometimes when people are doing book distribution, people ask, hey, you seem to be like an educated person. Why are you doing this? Why are you distributing these books in local trains? So people are inquisitive, isn't it? I mean, you have all the facilities. You look educated and you have a good degree. It seems like that. So how is it that you are doing all these simple activities? Why don't you work in a software company? And why are you here? Should be like us, isn't it? That's generally what people also react when they see devotees. They're shocked. They can't understand that you've got all the facilities to just do everything what people are doing, and you're not doing these things. So that is exactly actually what Prahlad Maharaj is also amazed. He's not amazed why, he's not amazed. He's asking these questions for us to realize that what is of true importance. So in the subsequent verses, there's a wonderful knowledge and philosophy which is spoken by this Paramahamsa devotee. Wonderful. One of the words which he speaks, he says, Shok moha bhaya krodha raga klaibya shramadeha yan moolaha syur nanam jayat spriham pranarthayor buddha. He says, those in human society who are intelligent should give up the original cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, attachment, poverty, and unnecessary labor. They should intelligently give up the original cause of all these things. What is that? Original cause of all these things is what? He says, the desire for unnecessary prestige and money. This is the cause of all these lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, attachment. What? Unnecessary prestige and money. So we can see that his renunciation, apparent rejection of material activities is coming from this very deep understanding of philosophy, Krishna conscious philosophy, that these are actually the source of great anxieties. When you have money, what happens? Immediately, he speaks in other verses, he says that when you have money, immediately you are worried. Oh, you know, I will be taxed by the government. Oh, some thieves may come and steal away my money. I should protect it. So he's constantly in anxiety. He becomes suspicious of his own relatives. You know, he loses all his friends. He becomes proud. Oh, I am the controller. He loses his dependency on others. He doesn't depend on anyone. What to speak of depending on God? So all these are some of the demerits which accrue because of having unnecessary wealth. Now if you see any rich man, I mean, he doesn't have the luxury to go out on the street and go to the thela wala, purchase a banana or something like that, which we can do, isn't it? We go to the street and go banana, pomegranate or a santra or something, immediately, who cares, you know, no one looks at us. But can the big film stars do that if he feels that I just want to go out and purchase a fruit, you know? He can't do that. I mean, he will be mugged. He will be brutally, you know, bashed up. Why? Because he's so famous, he's lost his privacy. He doesn't have any privacy. I mean, that's something so so important, isn't it? We all need privacy. We all want freedom to go where we want to, and something so simple, something so basic, he doesn't have. Why? Because he's so wealthy. Immediately when a person gets wealth, what does he need? He needs security guards. Just see. That means what? He's locked himself up in the room. He doesn't have freedom. Constantly afraid. If I have to go, I have to go with a bodyguard. I have to go in a bulletproof car. And this and that. And many times rich people get a lot of phone calls. You know, saying that, you know, I want so much wealth, you better deliver it. The moment someone wins a lottery, it explains, anyone who wins a lottery, say a crore or something, or 2 crore or something, immediately that person starts getting, it seems, many people start getting, blackmailing, extortion calls. See, you better now start, you better deposit so money in so-and-so bank account, or else you, when you're going out of your house, you'll be finished. So much of fear to one's life if one is wealthy. Income tax and all this tax and that tax. Somehow or another, people are trying to evade all these things. And all of the consciousness is gone just in trying to. Isn't it? So these are the wonderful facts which this Avadhut Paramhamsa is speaking about. Like there's a story of a king who had one servant. And the servant was very blissful. And the king was thinking, what is this? I mean, how is it that I am the king, I've got all this wealth, money and this thing, I am under stress and this servant of mine is so blissful? So he asked his minister, what's going on? I mean, what is happening here? I've got everything and I'm not blissful. He said, that's not a big deal. He's only blissful because he's not a member of the 99 club. So the king said, what is this 99 club? I will show you. So he told the king, I will perform an experiment. I'm going to take a pouch. I'm going to put 99 gold coins in that pouch. And I'm going to give it to him in his house, drop it in his house. And then you see the fun. So the king was observing. And the minister did that. He just dropped that money. So the man, that servant, he found it. What is this? And he opened it and he found it. Gold. He was so happy. Gold! We got so much gold! And then his wife was saying, how did you get so much? I don't know, it just appeared here. Oh, wow, good fortune, a good fortune. He was so happy. And so then they started counting it. Let's count how much we have. What's our fortune? And they started 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And they counted 98, 99. They said, what is something wrong here? Why is it 99? It's an odd figure. Should have been 100, isn't it? No, I think we have counted wrong. You count again. And confirm, it should be 100, I think. So they again start counting. 97, 98, 99. There's something wrong here. Why can't we be the owner of 100 gold coins? So then they thought, okay, let's work hard now. Let's work hard so that we can earn the money so that we can get the 100 gold and cover it up, make it up. So now, even after getting 99 gold coins, husband and wife started working extra. And the king was observing the servant. The servant had become very stressed out and, you know, he was like working in double shifts and triple shifts and once because he's got the taste of money. And the king, thinking that now he should be satisfied, now he saw that he had become all the more distressed. And the king looked at the minister. The minister looked at the king and the king said, yes, that's a fact. That's the price you pay for becoming the member of the 99 club. Once we have money, then it's not sufficient. You need more. A person who doesn't have a car feels, I need a car. Then he gets a car. Then he feels, why a Maruti? I need a Ford. And he gets a Ford. And he says, why a Ford? I need a Mercedes. And then he rides a Mercedes and thinks, wow, this feels good. And he's enjoying it. After some time, he says, no, this is not good. His mind gets used to it. Then he feels, now I want a jet. I want a jet. So that's what happens. So the nature of the mind is that he gets used to whatever he has, he gets used to it. He gets used to it. And then that, what he is to get pleasure out of that, it becomes a bore. Now he wants to experience something else. Like many times when I'm coming from Vidya Vihar, and I stand to catch the train at Elphinstone, there is an overhead bridge. And when I see them, when I'm waiting for the train, I see many of these Westerners, they come there. From the bridge, they're watching the beggars, the slum dwellers, washing their clothes in the Nala. And I was thinking, what are the people watching? Because they have not seen poverty, they want to witness what is poverty. Probably they are so bored with just seeing everything so spick and span that they want to experience what is poverty. So they come for a break, to come and see what exactly is poverty and experience it. That's the nature of the mind. You've got wealth, you want to experience poverty. If you have poverty, you want wealth. Never satisfied. So knowing that actually, the original cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger is actually the desire for unnecessary prestige. People want to become famous. One has to give that up. Because when a person becomes famous, he does not get any fans actually. He only gets people to envy him. Because in this world, everyone has come to become gods. Everyone has come here to become famous and wealthy. So if one person is famous and wealthy, all the others are thinking, why are you famous and wealthy? Why am I not famous and wealthy? Or if they are attracted to you being famous and wealthy, all they are wanting to know is, how have you reached that stage of becoming rich and wealthy? And why don't you share some of your secrets with me so that I can become rich and wealthy? So actually, it is not true love. In the words of Radhana Swami, he says that many times it's cricketers, they become very famous. And they win a match abroad, someplace, and then they come back to the home country, and all the fans are like, oh, and they're with a garland of flowers, and it may appear like love and true feelings, but no, but next time when they lose, the same fans are with a garland of slippers, and they're waiting for you to humiliate you. So what was that for? I mean, was that then? What was all that flower garland for? No, the flower garland was that how you have made them feel so great about themselves. You have made us feel great of being whatever. If you are playing for India, then India is so great. And now you have lost the match or whatever, and you have made us feel like a fool. So now you are no good. So now you need to be condemned. So where is the love? There is no love, actually. So money and prestige only gets envy, only gathers envy. There is no really, an intelligent person actually should give up all these things. So that is the message which this Paramhamsa gives to all the people. So many people know about this, but still they never learn lessons. They have heard all these philosophies, but still they never learn. There's a story of a bald man and a bale tree. Man was walking, and he was walking under a tree, a bale tree, and a bale fruit, you know how it is, like a ball. It falls on his head. Bang! Oof! And he looks up and he thinks, oh, how horrible. So when he's coming back, he's telling his assistant, look, I won't pass from this way. So the assistant tells him, why? I mean, this is the shortest cut. He says, no, last time I walked from this place, this bale fruit fell on my tree, on my head. So I'm not going to walk from this. So he says, come on, that was an accident. It's not that every time a person walks under the tree, a bale fruit has to fall on his head. It is an accident. It rarely occurs. He says, no, but still I'm not going to walk from under this tree. We'll take another route. And he took a long cut. So this example story is spoken that how people are many times so careful to make sure that they don't commit the same mistake again. But still, after knowing so much philosophy, still somehow or another we, you know, still run after money as if money will bring us happiness. No, I want a better, still a better job can, you know, I can do so much service for Krishna. Something in that pretext, we somehow, you know, want to have a better job or whatever. But actually the root desire sometimes may not be Krishna consciousness, maybe, you know, something else. So, we have seen in the lives of great Vaishnavas that how name, fame, prestige is actually no good. In the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's a wonderful story. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, when he was young, he was Nimai Pandit. And he was attending the grammar school of his guru, whose name was Vasudev Sarvabhauma. And he was a very famous guru. And in his Gurukul, there was another person whose name was Raghunath, another student. And this Raghunath was also a very, very expert. Very expert. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being the Supreme Lord also, he mastered all the grammar rules, the pankti. All the panktis and all the rules of grammar. He became a teacher. So Raghunath, even he was such an expert and so overconfident that he did not feel that anyone could excel him in his studies. So one day, the professor gave him a homework. He said, make a frame a sentence in grammar. So whole day, this Raghunath was trying to make the sentence in Sanskrit. So he was trying to make it. After a whole day of hard labor and thinking, finally finished his work and he started cooking. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu happened to visit his house and he said, you're cooking so late in the night. Why so late? He says, I had this homework to do and I was making this, wanting to make the Sanskrit sentence. Took me a long time. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nimai said, where is that sentence which you phrased? So he said, here it is. He said, he laughed. Nimai said, for such a simple statement, you spend the whole day? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately, he formed his own different statement. Immediately, on the spot. And then he himself started finding fault with his own phrase. And Raghunathji was like, you know, he was like amazed and he was threatened that, my God, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nimai is far more greater intelligent scholar than me. So later on, a task was given to these two, to all the students to write a thesis or some kind of research on logic. And Raghunath also wrote and Nimai also wrote a book on logic. And when they were going to submit their thesis report, Raghunath was aware of the intelligence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of Nimai. So he told him that, would you kindly read out some of the things that you have written in your book? So Nimai, he opened the book and he started reading out. And when he read out, Raghunath started shedding tears. And Nimai was so absorbed in reading that he did not notice that he was crying. So he looked at me and said, hey, why are you crying? He started weeping and he started saying that, I also wrote a book. And I was thinking that I will be the best, my book will be the best. But hearing your the work which you have presented, I am confident that no one will even touch my book. It is so good. So seeing that seeing that someone is superior to me in this field is so intolerable for me. It's intolerable. I can't tolerate it. What to do? I'm so fallen. And he started weeping tears. Hearing that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started laughing loudly. Nimai, he started laughing loudly and he started saying, oh, such a small thing, such a small thing. What for you, what to speak of this grammar book, I can even give my life. And saying that, he took the grammar book which he wrote, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself wrote, Nimai wrote, threw it into the river. That's it. So we see that Nimai, from his own personal example, he was saying that what is of true value? And when Raghunath saw that, he said, Nimai, you are truly a great saint. Because only a true saint can truly be detached from the desire for name, fame, prestige and wealth. And I've seen that. You've got intelligence. At the same time, you've got complete renunciation. I'm sure that this act of yours will become more famous than the act of me presenting this grammar to the students. And that book is still available. It is explained. Diditi, the book which was written by Raghunath, is still available amongst scholars, still being used. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nimai, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never presented any book. He never wrote any book. Even though he was a Supreme Lord. Why? Because he wanted to present. He was playing the part of a devotee. And he was not eager for name, fame, prestige, the Supreme Lord himself. Showing that what is the attitude, what is the mood of a devotee. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I mean, as Nimai, he could have said, you know, look, you know, Raghunath, why can't you just be humble? Just be detached. Know for sure that I am great, better than you. And that way you will achieve peace and happiness. He could have just said that and kept quiet. No, he in fact presented from his own example what is detachment by throwing his own book into the water. He did not preach to him by words, but he preached to him by his action. By what? By giving up something so valuable, a work by the Supreme Lord himself, into the water. So this is a great preaching actually, a preaching through example, which Nimai did. So this is the quality of a Supreme Lord, one of the qualities possessed by the Supreme Lord, that he is completely detached. So it is not easy to give up desire for name, fame, prestige. It is very, very difficult. It's very, very difficult. Shankaracharya says, you know, what good is lust when youth is fled? What use is a lake which has no water? Where are the relatives when wealth is gone? And where is samsar when truth is known? So material things are actually temporary. And he says that one must seek out the true treasure within our heart. The heart has actually the true treasure. The wealth is within our hearts. If you seek out the wealth within your heart, the Supreme Lord within the heart, there is no need of seeking happiness outside. The desire for name, fame, prestige is only a symptom of a person's lack of satisfaction in life, that he seeks pleasure outside. Therefore, this Paramhamsa devotee in this subsequent verses, he says that it is like a deer who is walking in the forest and he does not see a hole which is dug up for him because it is covered by grass. Similarly, the soul, the living entity, he's got the bliss within his heart, but he cannot see that bliss within his own heart because of the covering of the material body. He cannot see that. It's there, but he cannot see it. Just like when I was in Bangalore once, I was waiting, many years before coming to Krishna consciousness, I was waiting at a hotel, waiting to check into the room with my parents. So there was one man who was checking out. So he gave his pay, made his payment, and when he was going out, he was looking desperately for something. And all the people were looking at him, searching. Literally 15 minutes he was searching. After some time, someone asked him, "What are you searching for?" So, you know, I'm searching for my glasses, you know, my very expensive glasses. I don't know where I left them. And they looked at him, his glasses were on his head only, here. And he forgot. And he says, "It's here on your head." He says, "Oh, thank you very much. And he put it back and then he left peacefully. So many times, you know, we forget, right? We become unconscious about what we have, what we possess. Therefore, Brahma, he thought, you know, where to put the bliss? Where is a place where the living entities will never seek out? It is his own heart, so he put it there. The living entities will search everywhere, all over the world, travel all over the world to seek out happiness, but he will never find it. So he said, "All right, I'll put it in the heart only here, right?" So that is what it is. The fact lies that the bliss is within our hearts, but it is not easy. Therefore, it is explained that we need mercy. We need mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For it said, Kaivalyam narkayate, Tridashpur akash bushpayate. So that all these pleasures of this material world is actually insignificant if one gets Karunya kataksh vaibhavatam tam gauram evastumaha. That if we get the drop of the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is sufficient to become completely detached from this world. So, Srila Prabhupada has very mercifully given us a process given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Is to simply chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrind ki jai, Gaur Premanandai, Hare Hare.